Hey guys, this is Eddie McClintock. I play Special Agent Pete Latimer on Warehouse 13. At least I did before they canceled us. Shh. And you guys are listening to Paul, Ian, and Matt on the McSauce podcast. Check it out. What's up?
Welcome to episode 367, a very special episode of the McSauce Podcast. It is Monday night, April 5th, and tonight we bring to you a very serious topic, that of art versus artist. After one of your beloved artists has done something egregious, can you still enjoy the art that they put out into the world pre-egregion? We're also going to follow things up at the end of the episode with a little Godzilla vs. Kong talk. My name is Paul McGinty. With me, as always, are Ian the Sauce Sharpley.
Greetings.
And Matt Cassell.
Paul has never done this before.
He's completely lost his mind in an effort to be a more new and improved series, Paul.
Right.
He forgot how to do his job.
Paul
Matt
has
said, no jokes. No jokes tonight. We had to get all of our diddling buttholes and everything out of the way before we started recording. So from this point on, none of that talking.
You're not even allowed to smile.
No way. This is McSauce 2.0. McSauce NPR.
McSerious.
Ian, do you want to do some serious housekeeping?
Sure. I'll just do normal housekeeping. If you go to McSauce.com, you can check out our webcomics and our podcast. Go to any of the social media sites. Hit those up to have a conversation with us. Make suggestions about the things that you want to hear on the podcast. We're on pretty much all the different socials. If you want to actually listen to the podcast, you can listen to it pretty much any way that you get your podcasts, be it iTunes. If you have a brand new iPod Touch Nano that you just bought and you want to download our show and then listen to it later, you can do that. If you want to join the new age kids, the Jetsons, if you will, and listen on Spotify or Stitcher, you can also do that. However you want to absorb the podcast,
it's
up to you.
Who could ever be troubled with the labyrinthine nature of Spotify?
It's very confusing. I want to know, how can one buy an iPod Nano in this day and time?
I think it's called the dark web.
Yeah, the person that shall remain nameless have to murder to get this iPod Nano? I love you, Grim. I'm sorry, buddy. If you would like to hear some specialized episodes, we do a Patreon show for $5 a month. We will give you some additional episodes that are a little bit different than what the normal fare that we have on here. And by a little bit different, I mean a lot of Transformers talk, video game talk, and some music talk. But we're also looking to expand out and do some different things as well. So go to Patreon and type in McSauce, and you will be able to find all of our exclusive episodes there. We also have a Tee Public store if you want to get mouse pads or t-shirts or blankets with our logos on it.
Wall tapestries.
Yeah, knock yourself out. So go to teepublic.com and once again type in your favorite podcast and all of our wares will appear magically. That's all I got.
So what brought this topic on was Matt started reading a book series called The Belgariad, right?
The Belgariad.
The series is called The Belgariad?
Yeah, by an author named David Eddings.
And so Matt's been enjoying the series, and he decided, you know what, I'm gonna get a little background on David Eddings. And, just color Matt's world of The Belgariad with a little bit of what the author's really putting into it. And
yeah,
Matt,
sometimes the about the author section isn't quite as robust as you might want it to be. Sometimes it's just the right amount of robustness, as I have found out to be the case.
Yeah, and you got a little more information than you were expecting.
Yeah, I was really sad to learn that David Eddings in 1970 was convicted and sentenced to a year in prison for child neglect. Him and his wife each served a year each in jail. And that's a tough pill to swallow for somebody that's, for me, being a fan of these books the way that I am. I mean, I'm reading these books and I'm literally thinking as I'm reading, I'm like, this might be the best book I ever read. I'm enjoying it so much.
Wow, high praise.
I am enjoying it so much. It has rekindled a fire within me that kind of didn't really exist, because all of my reading, for the most part, was comic books. And before comics, I read quite a bit. I mean, children's books, really. But I was a reader, and then that transitioned into comics. But since comics are not as fulfilling as they used to be, I decided to maybe look into novels. And after a lot of research and a lot of like kind of reaching out and trying to get recommendations, the Belgariad seemed to kind of check all of those boxes that I was looking for. And as I read it, I was like, wow, this is exactly what I was looking for. This is wonderful. And so I wanted to learn a little bit more about the author, who, you know, has a fairly mundane biography on, you know, according to the back of his books. But there's a detail that emerged in the last few years about him, which is he's a convicted child abuser.
So that started showing up in his later works?
It showed up
posthumously.
What is it?
Posthumously. After death.
Posthumously.
Because when you're living, you're humus.
Posthumously.
Yes.
How do you say it?
Posthumously. Easy for you guys to say. I'll say it the funny way. Posthumously.
Okay.
Posthumous.
So, it started showing up after he died.
Yeah. Right. And, man, he was a beloved author. I mean, millions of fans read his books. And, you know, they got so many good things out of his stories, you know, like good lessons to somewhat, like, model your own virtues by. And I think it's a lot of people that wanted to pass these stories to their children. And it really got me thinking. It's like, man, these stories are like still good, and I was still enjoying it, but I don't feel like I can in good conscience read. I feel like I have to stop, even though I want to keep going. I want to see what happens.
How far are you into the series of books?
About a third of the way through the series.
Yeah.
About two books in out of five.
Did you already purchase all five?
They came in three books in each volume, and I did get the other one.
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, I was reading about his other books that he wrote after. I was like, oh, I'm going to read those at some point. That sounds really good too. And I mean, it's not about the money spent, whatever. If I don't read them, then I get rid of the books. I don't know if I want them on my bookshelf. That's like the bigger issue. Can I somehow separate this man's deeds from the stories that I'm reading?
Well,
and there's a million examples out there where sometimes we do and sometimes we don't.
First, give us a little more detail in what exactly the child neglect charge was.
Well, I had trouble finding many details about it, but I tried. There's very little, actually, there's virtually no court documents that I was able to find, but I was able to find one newspaper article from some South Dakota newspaper from 1970. That
I'd like to think you were down at the public library scrolling through the microfiche like an old 70s
like
spy thriller.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Cloak and Dagger. A Dabney Coleman looking over your shoulder.
So, according to this article, they said that his adopted son was kept in the basement in a cage or caged in or something to that effect, like given a small area, and was neglected, was not sexually molested or anything, was not malnourished, but was neglected and had some bruises on his arms, I think, is what they said. Now, I mean, who knows what that means? Does that mean the kid got beaten?
And how, old, that was mean, this, how old was this kid? You say four?
I believe he was four. And then there were, and he was his adopted son. And David Eddings had a wife, Lee Eddings. And they both got in trouble for this. And they had an adopted daughter who was younger than the boy, but how much younger, I don't know.
So they adopted two kids and neglected them.
I believe the charge for neglect was only for the boy. I could be wrong on that.
And they got charged in 1970 for this.
Correct. And I believe the neglect happened in the late 60s, but they went to jail in the 70s. Yeah. In 1970.
When did the books get published?
1982 was the first book.
Oh, so he was rather prolific after his brief stint in jail.
He was not a writer at that point. He was a professor. He had other various jobs, but I believe at that time he was a professor. Then he went to jail. He wasn't a professor anymore, Ian.
But then he reemerged as a writer.
Then he reemerged
as
a writer.
As one does.
He wrote one...
Or a follower of Islam.
What's that?
Or a follower of Islam.
He wrote a non-fantasy book, but then shortly after that... Wait, when did the... I can't remember when his first book came out, but it was significantly before the Belgariad. But then he did the Belgariad, and once he made his mark in the fantasy genre and he had success, that's just all he did at that point until he died. Well, actually, that's not true. Until his wife died. His wife was actually a collaborator with him on these books, and in the later books, she started to be credited as co-author of the books.
Do you think there's a possibility that he was rehabilitated during that jail time, and he did come out a better man than he was when he went in, and decided to really throw himself into his writing to, can't speak to him trying to atone for something, but
coming
out of the jail time, and then he bangs out one novel, and then he does this Belgariad series, maybe there was a change in him.
I actually believe that is the case, which adds to the conflict for me. Because I feel like almost instinctually, I just want to write it off, get rid of these books, get them out of my house, and just try to pretend like the bell what. But there is evidence to support what you're saying, because I think based on some of the context in the book, there are some somewhat like adoptive parent type relationships that are written of in kind of like positive, light. But more importantly, when he died, He had willed $10 million to pediatric asthma research, as well as $18 million. I saw somewhere between $18 and $20 million to his alma mater to give to, like, quote, less fortunate students that maybe couldn't afford college, so it would go out as like scholarships for these students. So he left his fortune to do good into the world.
In his books,
particularly aimed at children. His books are for, well, I think they're all ages, unless, you know, maybe I'm a child, but I'm really enjoying it. But I think there are lessons that age knows no limit to. So yes, Paul, I do think that after his jail time, he was a rehabilitated person, but I'm still struggling to reconcile what he did and be okay enough with it that I can continue to, in good conscience, read his books.
I think you do have to take into account if somebody did pay for what they did, right? And he and his wife made this settlement and went to jail and paid.
That is true. They had to admit guilt to, I believe, get a reduced sentence.
So not only admitting the guilt, but dedicating their professional careers partially, not wholly, but in part, to telling these tales of virtue. And then, you know, in his will, trying to boost up and help less fortunate children. I think to me, just hearing you break it down really quickly like that, the good that this man and his wife did outweighs the bad that possibly he did at a different time. I don't think that you can holistically judge anyone on singular events. Sure, there are a lot of events that are really terrible, but if you go through the rest of your life and then even post life, you're still trying to put some kind of good in the world and atone for what you did. I think that has to be weighed in to your decision.
I do agree, Ian. Certainly his biography was strategically scrubbed of any mention of his previous sins. I certainly think if this was information that was available to us today, he would never have been given the opportunity to atone for those sins, write stories that could, transcend generations as stories that people adore and love and want to pass on to their kids. I'm glad, I guess, that he got the chance to do that, but it still gnaws at the back of my mind what he did, because in my opinion, Ian, there's very little worse than child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Murder?
I would say murder is up there. Child murder, the combo, the 1-2 combo.
I mean, murder's final. There's no rehabilitation after you're murdered. Like, if you are abused as a child, you can still be rehabilitated with therapy, whatever. Still lead a quality life. Sometimes children are unable to do that, but sometimes they are able to do that. So I can't help but feel like murder is a worse thing. Murder's the worst.
Yeah. Do you feel like a murderer themselves, you're talking a lot about the victim, but do you think that the murderer themselves can be rehabilitated?
Well, I mean, there's all kinds of different types of murder. Mm-hmm. There's first degree, there's manslaughter, all that stuff. Knowing the little bit that I know about serial killers, for example, David Berkowitz is like many killers are quote rehabilitated, and they find Jesus and they lead a holy life. I kind of call bullshit on that. I think I could be wrong, but I tend to think people like that are somewhat weak-minded and
that's the top of the top tier of murderer too that we're dealing with.
It is. I mean, serial killer. So, you know, to look at other artists that have committed murder of some kind, Matthew Broderick is an example.
Broderick.
Yes. Yeah. And it's
called Ferris Bueller, you know.
And posthumously,
yes.
Right.
He's done nothing posthumously yet. Still very
just
much
give
alive.
Give him a chance.
Right.
His ghost.
Matthew Broderick was driving a car and struck another car because he was driving in the wrong lane and he killed a mother and a daughter. But yet we still love those Matthew Broderick movies.
What was Matthew Broderick drunk?
Matthew Broderick was, I believe he was in a different country where we drive on the opposite side of the road. I think it was Ireland.
Was it like a complete fucked up accident?
Yeah, I think he fucked up. He was in the wrong lane and he slammed into a car.
See, that's another example of what we were talking about before we started recording. Matt brought up Ted Kennedy. Is that right? And yes. I brought up Vince Neil.
Well, the Ted Kennedy thing also has like shades of cover up around
Well,
it.
The Ted Kennedy thing has a ton of like conspiracy theories surrounding it. So maybe that's not a road we want to go down. Maybe that's not a good example, but something like the Vince Neil, he's just carelessly fucked up.
I was like, enlighten those that don't know this.
What, Ted Kennedy?
No, I know Ted Kennedy. I don't know what you're talking about with Vince Neil.
They were at some him the guy I can't
believe
remember
it
the
or
other
not
band's name.
Vince Neil was driving under the influence.
No shit, and killed some people. And I didn't know that. Honestly.
Yeah, they were. I wish I could remember. Like it's on the tip of my tongue. Can't think of it. Motley Crue, another band. They were at some huge party. Vince Neil and this other guy went out to get one of the guys from the other bands. They like went out to get more beer or something. They were both super drunk. Super high, and Vince Neil got in a huge car wreck, like on the way back, and the other guy died. Mm-hmm. So, like, we were talking about the semantics between, you know, like murder and manslaughter. Like, Vince Neil didn't leave that party saying, I'm gonna fucking kill this guy. He was just careless.
But his reckless acts resulted
yes.
in that.
Yes, he is why that guy got killed. Yeah. But it wasn't like, I am going to murder this person. It wasn't a purposeful act. And like, I'm not trying to exonerate Vince Neil for, you know, being the cause of another person dying. But the fact is, it wasn't David Berkowitz. It wasn't, I'm going to go fucking kill someone tonight. It was just a complete reckless act. So, I mean, I don't know the details about the Matthew Broderick thing, but I feel like just a fucking horrible accident like that is much easier to accept and give forgiveness for than, oh, I'm purposefully going to keep my son in a cage, or I'm purposefully going to fuck this little kid, or I'm purposefully going to murder anybody.
Yeah, the Matthew Broderick thing is, it seemed like it was purely an accident. I don't know if that makes it better, worse, whatever, but
yeah,
it does seem like an accident.
You know, it's sometimes some of these details do seem to get forgotten too, though. Like, whereas other times they seem to never go away. You know, we look at people like Bill Cosby. None of us are listening to Bill Cosby comedy albums anymore.
No.
Or enjoying any of his work ever. It's impossible. You can't appreciate anything that he did. Nobody's watching episodes of The Cosby Show. You just can't do it now. But
yeah. Some of the reasons for that are some of the things that he talked about in his comedy had real life one-to-ones. He does kind of talk about roofying women or giving them Spanish fly or whatever,
right.
In a, you know, very family-friendly, humorous kind of fashion. And then you see he has this just like very predatory nature about how many times he did it over and over again. There seems like there is no there's no sorrow, or he's not remorseful at all about what he was doing or what he did or how long he did it and wielded that power over those women. Maybe that has something to do with why people are unable to get past that. What's interesting is, say in 20 years, will people be able to engage with that kind of content? People that weren't around during it, or you don't think that? I mean, because The Cosby Show probably still will be. You can go on Amazon right now and you can watch episodes if you want to. It'll still probably be around for people to watch.
I don't think so, man.
Yeah.
He's a pretty vile guy. Like, nobody is pulling up clips of O.J. Simpson's 2,000-yard season and being like, look at how
speak for yourself.
Look at how good this guy was at running back. This is amazing. Like, nobody cares because he cut a person's head off.
So,
allegedly.
I was thinking about this as we were talking, and maybe for me anyway, there's a separation between seeing the artist and not seeing the artist, because when you're watching Bill Cosby, like I can't watch The Cosby Show anymore without thinking, one, how gorgeous is Felicia Rashad?
Didn't we watch The Cosby Show for a Patreon episode?
Yeah, we did. And then it didn't record. We screwed up the
record. God didn't let it record.
It's hard to... It's like, I loved that Bill Cosby stand-up special when I was a kid. Like, I thought it was the funniest thing, but like, I don't think I could appreciate it now, because the whole time I'd be thinking, oh man, like just looking at him, I'm like, oh, this dude did this. Same way with Louis C.K. I never liked Louis C.K. I never thought Louis C.K. was funny. He just wasn't my brand of comedy. But knowing, you know, how, you know, he violated handfuls of women just by jerking off in front of them, I'm like, when I'm watching that stand up now, I'm like, that's all I can see.
Because in his stand up, he talks about that kind of stuff. You know, it's the exorcism of those demons that kind of gets at me, because I'm like, oh, you're joking about that. But that's the shit that you do. You do that.
Yeah, but with other people that have come under fire, like J.K. Rowling lately and Ethan Van Sciver, a comic book artist, I have no problem still loving their contributions to popular culture. And maybe it's because personally I don't see them. I'm not looking at them.
When you say you don't see it, you mean like you don't see their tweets or their videos?
They're not in the work. I'm not seeing their face. Like when I see Bill Cosby, all I think of now is,
I see,
oh, he roofied and raped all these women.
Behind the scenes.
But when I read Harry Potter, I just see
Harry Potter. Yeah.
When I read Green Lantern, I just see Green Lantern.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, that Harry Potter series is amazing. It's wonderful, amazing literature.
You agree with that, Ian?
I think I'm even more. I have some weird selective.
No.
Thing.
She has some... the Harry Potter series.
Oh, I didn't like it even before I knew she was a scumbag.
J.K. Rowling has some weird takes on a lot of things, but it's not present in those books. Like, it's not even like none of her issues are in those books. Like, just like the Belgariad books, all like those Harry Potter books are about heroism and friendship and triumph and acceptance. All of that stuff is in there. Like, all of those core values of being a human being, mm-hmm. those are all in those books. And they're very present. They're not hidden behind there's only two genders.
Right.
Or any weird stuff like that. And it's the same way with the Ethan Van Sciver Green Lantern stuff. Jeff Johns gets all the credit for writing all those, for like rebooting Green Lantern and bringing Hal Jordan back. But Ethan Van Sciver was just as big a part of creating the Color Lantern cores and building out, you know, Blackest Night and like all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Sinestro War. Well, and like all of it has the big heroic positive comic book tenets that you look for, even though he's a fucking crazy person.
He's a little nutty, isn't he?
Yeah, he's something.
We interviewed him. Could you have the intern find out what episode that was that we interviewed Ethan Van Sciver? He might have been the first McSauce interview. And, I mean, of course it's a good interview. We conducted it. But he wasn't the greatest interviewee. He did not seem like he wanted to participate all that much with us, which was very interesting, Paul, because I felt like the day before when you had
a commission?
Yeah,
like you a piece of artwork for him?
Right. You had engaged him the day before. He was much more affable and willing to kind of chat with you and stuff. And then when we went and talked to him, he seemed like he couldn't be less interested.
Yeah, I don't. So, like, whenever we met him, I was like, fuck, what fucking year was that?
14?
I think it was 14. And, like, so all the weird Ethan Van Sciver stuff has come out after The Last Jedi. Like, he kind of started one of the Star Wars fandom groups
He's responsible
for a lot of the hate in the Star Wars community now, and it's like the
I think The Last Jedi is responsible for that, but
it's responsible for a lot of things. But I mean, that really kickstarted like Ethan Van Sciver kind of developing this group of people that are just I don't know enough about the group. Like, he used to write articles for Newsarama, and they were really fucking funny. And, like, all of his artwork was really good. And then all of a sudden, like, he just got so weird. And then he had a YouTube channel. And then it turned into, it's just shit-talking Star Wars stuff all the time. And it just got so much. And I feel like he just gathered all of the negativity of Star Wars fandom to him. And now he's this, like, black hole of Star Wars stuff. And, over the last 2 months, said some racist stuff. On that,
what did he say?
Page.
It was racist.
I forget what exactly he said, but it was real kind of weird.
Maybe,
because there was a black guy. There was a black guy on the call with him, and the black guy was like, it was weird.
Make sure you got your specifics on that one next time before you throw the term racist around. Just saying.
I saw the video. It was a remark that could easily be construed.
Okay.
As racist. Okay. How's that?
That's fair.
I do know one thing for certain that he did that I kind of find awful. He has some kind of, I don't remember the.
Did he beat children too?
No, he didn't. I can't remember specifically the creator that this was based on, but he had a conflict with this female creator on Twitter, and she mentioned that she was recovering from cancer or was diagnosed with cancer or something like that. And Ethan Van Sciver and his group of associates had a video all about just, you know, sort of making fun of the fact that this woman had cancer and, you know, wishing ill will on her. Because I can't remember exactly who the creator is, but I'll find it.
Please do. Because
I follow her. And she retweeted some of the videos of them essentially throwing a pizza party over the fact that she was diagnosed with cancer. And I thought it was pretty despicable.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, like, he's been completely ostracized from the comic book community. Like, he's completely toxic. Like, and it's like, I want to say, like, I'm disappointed and that's a real bummer, but like, I don't really care, because I don't really care about Ethan Van Sciver. Like, He can do whatever he wants. I don't give a fuck.
Does it disappoint you, though, that you're not going to get more Ethan Van Sciver or Green Lantern ever again?
The creator is Tess Fowler.
Hmm. Okay.
So right, if you want to go and look up Tess Fowler on Twitter, and you can find there's articles.
How do you spell her?
T-E-S-S mm-hmm. Fowler, F-O-W-L-E-R.
Okay.
Yeah, like I'm not upset that I'm not getting more of his creative process. Like but it's not going to taint that Green Lantern run for me. Like I love all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like I'm able to look at, you know, the Indigo Tribe and the Red Lanterns and
right.
Sinestro War and be like, man, this is so fucking good.
That's the thing, Paul. It's like somewhere along the way we draw lines where like the creator or the artist does something so egregious that we can't appreciate what they do. And I feel like Ethan Van Sciver being a dick isn't on the same level as David Eddings abusing a child.
Well, that's 100% true, but that's also sort of the timeline of it is why I asked when the abuse happened and when the books happened.
Okay, so what do you make of that?
I
think there's a big difference for somebody that does a bad deed, pays for the deed, and then spends parts of their lives, if not all of their life, sort of atoning for that deed. That's much different than somebody turning into what they currently are, which is a pretty bad human being. I think that's very different.
And well, very Ethan Van Sciver was probably a douchebag all the time. While he was writing all that Green Lantern stuff, he was probably an asshole. But, like, I mean, I didn't know that then. Like, nothing he was presenting online. Like I said, he was doing those articles. Like, he's always been a very open guy. Like, I've read, like, tons of interviews, and nothing weird came out about him until after all this Last Jedi stuff.
When we talked to him in 2014, I mean, nobody knew any of this stuff about him. But I came away from that thinking, wow, that guy's kind of a dick.
Yeah, and I don't want all of this new information to color that experience.
But it was what it was. I mean,
yes. It sounds like it was informative that this person who, when you were doing something for him, was engaged in really with it. But then when he had to do something for you,
I'm not defending the non-presence that he was during the interview. And there was the sense of when I commissioned him and I was talking to him in line, he was great. And then when Matt and I went back on the last day of the con to talk to him, he was like, he barely lifted his head up from the page. And he had told us that sit down, talk while he works. He's got a lot of commissions. I think he was, by no means am I making an excuse for his behavior, he was under the gun finishing up commissions for the show. He's not a big name like Rob Liefeld who can just kiss his way out of here a day early, because that was the same show.
It was the same show. It was a great show.
So I think he was under the gun getting commission work done before he had to leave. But at the same time, I'm like, then don't agree.
Yeah. I hear you, Paul, but you're right when you say that. And now I think I have to take a step back from what I was saying about he was kind of a dick. Like, I did come away from that thinking, like, he did not seem interested. Maybe a dick is a little too harsh, but you are right. He definitely was not as engaged as you would want somebody that you're interviewing. You know, we interviewed the incredibly personable Mike Quinn. Go find that episode, Andy. Look it up. Put it on the Twitter. But he was completely engaged with us. He let us go to a separate room where it was quiet and we could have an actual dialogue back and forth. Great interview. But anyway, I want to kind of bring this back on track, if that's okay. Because we're talking. Track? Well, this is becoming the Ethan Van Sciver episode. There's all kinds of different levels of being able to have an artist that does questionable things that also happens to make artwork that you love.
If you also, real quick, if you want to listen to the Mike Quinn interview, great interview, episode 297.
297, that was right before episode 300, if you do the math. I guess, you know, it's, for me personally, this has been a rough year for the things that I love. I feel like in the last 6 months, I've really had to come to terms with my falling out with Star Wars as a brand, with the fact that I don't really like mainstream comics at all anymore. I feel like they've alienated us completely. The creators that I love, you know, this new one in David Eddings, he turns out to be not so great of a guy. Ian, you're making me feel slightly better about him, but still. And then, what, Paul? You're
why
dissatisfied.
Why is Ian making you feel better?
I just have a way with words.
I'm sorry, Paul, that you weren't as effective as Ian in this therapy session. That's really what this is. This is just for my benefit. Here, let me give you a chance to make me feel better about another creator that I like.
Oh, juicy.
The band Iced Earth, you know I love Iced Earth. The creator of Iced Earth got himself in a little bit of hot water at the beginning of the year because he thought it would be a good idea. Because
he stormed the Capitol.
He thought it would be a good idea to visit the Capitol. Apparently that's a crime.
Light treason, I think they call it.
He was photographed and he had to turn himself in, and he is currently in jail awaiting trial. So that's been a little bit difficult for me to reconcile as well. Taking an artist that I adore the content that he created, and then he does something like this, and it's like, whenever I'm listening to music now and an Iced Earth song comes on, I'm like, I can't listen to this right now.
So
it just might be one of those things where I need a minute until I can go back and enjoy it again. But it
is
difficult.
Well, the way the last 2 years have been going, like, it's like one thing after another. You need to adjust quickly.
In a similar vein, and we talked about this a little bit before, Michael Jackson, a lot of horrible allegations out there about Michael Jackson. A lot of documentaries have been produced about the things that he allegedly did or did not do. I'm in the camp that believes that he did all of that stuff. I watched the Escaping Neverland documentary on HBO.
I think there's a lot of common sense that dictates, based on what we know for sure,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't feel like a leap to assume some of those other things.
Yeah,
probably
I always
took place.
Thought it was kind of insane that when he died, all of this stuff was just washed away. And he's just, mm-hmm. He's a perfect angel going up to heaven. And I'm like, what about all the child fucking? And everyone was like, what? You're breaking up. I can't hear you. And I'm like, child fucking. I can't hear you.
Bye now. So do you feel like currently
that is can't be the name of the episode.
Why not?
Do you think that currently that is people's position? Because I think it is severely turned from sweeping it under the rug to pulling that rug up and looking at all the ugliness that essentially was that man's life. The things that the victims, whenever they were interviewed and when they talk about their experiences with him, they're very graphic, very specific. I can't say that those people were out for money or lying or attention at all.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't follow a lot of Michael Jackson stuff. So I don't really know what the general public feel is on what he did or what I he mean, allegedly
you,
did.
But you talk to people. Do people bring up Michael Jackson as much as they used to, or play his albums, or?
I feel like there's still a lot of regard for his catalog. There's a lot of high regard for his catalog.
I agree.
But specifically when he died, like I said, he was like an angel being sent back up to heaven. And the whole time I'm like, wait a second. Why are we not talking about any of this weird stuff?
Well, when you say specifically when he died, that's what happens to everybody. Whenever you're writing a eulogy or people are eulogizing people that recently passed away. Recent people that have passed away that I think are some of the worst people in fucking American history still get pretty fair, even-handed eulogies.
Yeah.
And I think that that is as wrong as looking at Michael Jackson as if he was a saint. Yes,
I understand when he was, that sentiment.
In reality, having sex with children.
I understand the sentiment of not speaking ill of the dead. But do you think when Kevin Spacey dies, we're going to look back on his filmography, like, oh my God, American Splendor. Kaiser Soze. Oh, so great. No, he's going to die and that's going to be it. But something about Michael Jackson, just the super stardom of Michael Jackson just kind of tamped down all of the weird stuff. So when he died, it was just this, you know, blessed thing. God has his musician again.
But now, 10 years, 12 years, however long it's been after he's died, I think public opinion has very much changed.
Honestly, now I don't think anyone gives a shit. Like, really? I don't think. That's strange. Yeah, I don't think anyone cares.
If
that's weird. I care. Like, I have a hard time. I loved the music of Michael Jackson. Loved it. Had all the albums, listened to it as a kid, and even, you know, growing up all the way into my 30s. I don't listen to that stuff at all anymore.
Is it fucked up if you can like something up until you're like, oh, this is probably when he started diddling children, and now I don't like it anymore?
No, I like, I don't think that...
ABC, and you're like, fuck yeah, Michael Jackson.
That's a real...
And then you get to that weird Egypt video, and you're like,
he was definitely
fucking someone.
Why would you want to parse it like that? Why would you want to split hairs? To me, it is the same person. I'd rather not experience any of their work than try to play that game of mental gymnastics with myself where I'm like, well, he was a kid, so he wasn't fucking kids. Even if he was fucking kids, he was still a kid. Like, that's too much. I'm just going to not listen to his music voluntarily anymore.
Just presenting the theory.
We're not calling it that, Matt. I just don't engage with if there is somebody that I find problematic, I try not to engage with them. Now, I'm also a hypocrite.
The only
because
MJ you engage with is Michael Jordan.
What bad things did he's just an asshole and tormented his teammates, but I find that endearing. If we're going to talk about sports, this is where I'm a hypocrite. Ben Roethlisberger has been accused very credibly twice.
Wait. Credibly?
He
was not charged.
He wasn't charged, but there was an investigation. People did come out and allege that he did things.
Here's what I'm saying, though.
Yeah.
Okay, yes, there was an investigation.
Mm-hmm.
If there was probable cause found, he would have been charged, and he wasn't charged.
Okay. Is it coincidence that somebody finds themselves in pretty much the same kind of situation a couple of times within the same kind of context of what they were doing?
I tend to believe in his case, yes. I do think it's a coincidence, or not a coincidence. I think it's a pattern of very stupid and immature behavior of a man slut that was fucking other sluts that maybe had second thoughts on their sluttiness after.
Now, why are we casting aspersions on these women to say that
they're casting aspersions on both of them? I think Roethlisberger,
somebody to have in if it was consensual to have consensual sex with somebody is slutty, like just on its face like that, or
I mean, maybe like minutes within meeting them in a bathroom at a bar. Yeah, it's a little slutty.
Okay, so but it sounds like while you do believe that that something fishy happened, right? Some kind of friction.
Is that fishy? Some kind of friction.
Some kind of friction was going on in both of these situations.
Yeah.
Because there were no official police charges or any charges brought up. That is the thing that changes in your mind.
Man, that's a tough one.
I mean, it is tough, and I'm saying I'm a hypocrite because I'm like, throw that fucking touchdown, Ben.
I don't know, man. Like,
I tell you what, it does make it hard for me to root for him individually. It makes it difficult.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad this happened to him because boy, did it knock him down a few pegs. And I think it made him a better person.
I think so, too. And I do believe that he is self-reflecting now and feels guilt and he needs to possibly make amends. He's gone out and he has different charities.
But to your point a minute ago about like Michael Jackson, you're like, well, it's still the same guy.
It is the same guy. Yeah,
So, like, shut yourself off from Michael Jackson, but not Ben Roethlisberger.
Like I said, Matt, I admitted it. I'm a hypocrite.
Okay, yeah. But for David Eddings, you said kind of the same thing as, like, Ben Roethlisberger. You know, same guy, but he's done things to atone for his sins.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily... It seems like, from the description and the timelines of when Michael Jackson was accused, credibly accused of these things. It seems like he continued, even after his trouble with the law, he continued to do behavior very similar.
As child molesters do.
Yes.
They don't stop.
So to me, that means that there is no admission of guilt. There is no remorse.
No reflection.
I think that is where, and it's such a gray area, but that's where the line in the sand is for me. Is there remorse?
I feel like we're workshopping this a little bit.
I think so, too.
And I feel like I'm tracking with you on this, Ian.
Another example. So Michael Vick, I love dogs. I love dogs better than humans. Humans are pieces of garbage.
That's
I love
not
dogs.
Saying much. Like, I love things that are better than garbage, is what you just said.
It's a bold statement, I know.
How about I love dogs more than ice cream?
It's a tie.
Ice cream doesn't have the potential to bite you.
Ice cream doesn't love you back.
Dogs don't. Well, do dogs?
My dogs fucking love me. You better chill
the
fuck out.
Do dogs love you?
Do dogs love the person that's feeding them?
I think that dogs become attached to you. They're not cold, calculated pieces of garbage like cats are. They have emotions and feelings. They're not unthinking housemates.
I don't know, man. I think if you disappeared, I could sway Teddy over to me.
Oh, absolutely not. He's on the fence with me anyway. So, but anyway, I say all that to say that I think what Michael Vick did with dog fighting and anybody that does dog fighting and participates, like, does activities like that, that's disgusting. It's horrible. I just hate it, right? Michael Vick.
I had a negative visceral response to a weird alien being killed on Green Lantern, the animated series today. Like, when there are animals being killed or in danger, like, mm-hmm. I feel that deeper than I do people being killed.
I know. What does that say? So, anyway, Michael Vick, charged, jail, comes out, not only in everything that he says is remorseful, but has set up and has become sort of a beacon of, hey, dogfighting's really terrible. He has foundations. He goes out and does public speaking tours. I know people still to this day hate him and boycott him and all that stuff, but he has taken not just one step, but several steps to show remorse. And to me, that makes a big difference, I think.
It's hard with him because it's, I can remember when the charges were swirling about and he was in front of cameras denying, and just saying, you know, I look forward to the truth coming out and, you know, being totally clear to these charges and just lying.
Yeah.
Lying so bad. You know, being a liar is a pretty fucking gross trait in and of itself.
Hey, don't throw stones.
But I think because I remember how bold-faced of a liar he was, it's difficult to ignore everything since then, because maybe it's still all a lie.
I've listened to several interviews and watched a big old documentary on him, and it seems like, just based on who he was the biggest star in Virginia for a long time, and then went to the NFL and became, or went to college and was the biggest star there, and then went to the NFL and was, you know, a bigger star than the NFL had seen in a long time. And he was a young dude with tons of money. Sometimes you feel like you're untouchable. And I think about this. I was having a conversation today about some guy that I work with was talking about saving money, and I would do this and blah blah blah. And we were talking about young sports stars, and I was like, well, you wouldn't have done that whenever you were 20 years old. You would have spent that money on a car, or this or that. Like, when you, I think there's some room for forgiveness for people that are a little bit younger, and they, you know, people make mistakes. And how were you whenever you were 19, 20 years old? What kind of mistakes did you make? They weren't in public like that. So maybe there is some empathy that we have to show other people to, you know, give them that kind of forgiveness for making even huge mistakes like dogfighting or, you know, other horrible things. People, I think if you can't forgive somebody and there is no path back, then we as a society are really doing the wrong thing.
Right, like prison sentences should be life, right? If there's no rehabilitation.
Right, but also once you've served your time, I think you have paid your debt to society.
That right. That, I mean, in theory, that is what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
When does Bill Cosby get out of jail? Is he in jail? He's in jail, right?
I believe he's in jail. That's how close I'm paying attention to. I believe he's in jail. I do not believe that he will make it out of jail, however
there's no,
long
there's
his.
No way he doesn't die in jail. Like, right? I mean,
when does Louis C.K. get out of jail?
He's not in jail.
He's touring. We could probably see him in any city tomorrow.
Oh, you don't think it's sold out?
You don't think the pandemic is stopping live events?
Well, I mean, I know, well, as far as Allegheny County goes, yesterday
that.
We were open to 50%, so maybe the three of us and Louis C.K. would be in for a live show.
Would you go to a live show with just the three of us and Louis C.K.?
On the chance that maybe I'd get to see his dick, no.
My guess is he doesn't do that anymore.
Probably not. His management was probably maybe you don't do that. Stop that. I'll go see Brian Regan.
Bill Cosby's still in jail. I thought Brian Regan was. Are you just throwing out comedians and live events that you would or would not attend?
Yes. Yeah.
I was gonna say, what did Brian Regan do? Isn't he famously super clean?
Yeah, Brian Regan is like. I hope untouchable. Like, I hope he's like, he has a clean record.
Jinxed him.
Clean record. Yeah. Brian Regan's, you know, the family comic. He's great. I'd definitely go see him.
So then I guess, is that what we require from our artists or our sports stars for them to be totally clean? Because that isn't what I would want.
Not at all. Because it's a person-by-person basis, case-by-case basis. Like, you know, Ethan Van Sciver has seemingly lost his fucking mind, but I'm going to read Green Lantern Rebirth and Sinestro War with all of the love that I ever had for it.
See, that's weird. I cannot, like, knowing him, I can't go back and read that stuff.
All of the weird, like, anti-trans J.K. Rowling stuff, none of that is present in Harry Potter. None of Ethan Van Sciver's, like, weirdness is present in those Green Lantern books.
Well, he nails that Hitler likeness on Sinestro.
I get the sense that
did you just ruin Sinestro?
That Van Sciver.
I hope I did.
his behavior comes from a more hateful place, I get, than like J.K. Rowling's. It, you know, hers seems to be misguided.
Yeah, she seems to be coming from a place of science where she's like, "Well, you're born and you have one or the other, so you're one or the other."
Right, like I don't her rhetoric isn't hate filled the way Ethan Van Sciver's tends to be.
Yeah, Ethan Van Sciver's like, man. Let's get...
So I interpret those a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. So like for Ethan Van Sciver, like I'm kind of with Ian. Like I don't really have any interest in enjoying his work.
Well, that's fine, but none of that ideology is present in.
True, in those drawings, right?
Well.
Right.
I hate to break it to you, but Thriller isn't about having sex with kids. Like, that stuff's not present in Michael Jackson stuff either, but I can't engage with it because I know.
Ian, that's why I said it's a person-by-person basis. Huh? You know, we all have different lines drawn at different places.
Very true.
I can listen to Smooth Criminal like a motherfucker because it's a really good song. But maybe I just was never... crazy about Michael Jackson anyway.
How smooth is that criminal?
I don't know. He skated for a while until he had his doctor kill him.
Yeah. He moonwalked all the way to hell.
Was it as smooth as the skin texture on the back of Godzilla?
And speaking of Godzilla, Matt, what a great segue.
It was as smooth as that transition.
Yep.
We all watched Godzilla versus Kong. Kong versus Godzilla. What is it? I keep fucking it up.
Godzilla versus Kong.
We all watched it over the
weekend. So it was Kong's home game, is what we're saying, right?
It turned out not being because they.
Neutral site?
They fought in the water.
Right. On that boat.
Godzilla's territory.
Water.
And then they fought.
All of water.
Right. But Godzilla is. He was born in the water. Like, he swims a lot. He comes from under the ocean. So that's Godzilla's home court.
Okay.
And then where did they fight next?
They fought in a city. In Hong Kong. That's absolutely home turf.
For who?
For Godzilla.
Right. So, yeah, this wasn't a home game for
that's
Kong
racist
at all.
Of me. But Hong Kong is in China, correct?
Yes, it's not
Japan. And Godzilla is a Japanese kaiju.
Yes, that's correct.
Ooh.
But in the sense that Godzilla is used to fighting in cities. Kong in this trilogy only fights in the jungle. So
two away games for Kong? Jeez, oh man. Who built this schedule for him?
Well, you know, they really pump him up in the movie. Like, the first scene in the movie, it's like, feel bad for this guy. This is the good guy. You need to fuck the water lizard. This is your hero. They pumped Kong's tires so fucking hard in this movie. And we knew it from the first trailer when he just fucking cold cocks Godzilla on that boat. And I'm like, Godzilla's just trying to save us from ourselves.
So it sounds like you had a lot of positive feelings about this film, Paul.
I liked it. I don't think I liked it as much as King of the Monsters. I think, and it's kind of a ridiculous statement to make in, you know, the sense of the storytelling, but I think the science in King of the Monsters made more sense than it did here. Like, I feel like a lot of the time in Godzilla vs. Kong, I was like, wait, what are they doing? They need to go through the earth to get what? But there's this whole other world in there. And like, I was trying to picture it and I was like, fuck it. Just show me those monsters fighting. But like, I thought that. And then my other big thought from this movie was, is Hong Kong that bright? Is it all magentas and cyans? Is it a huge, like, Suicide Squad colored city? Does it look like Ragnarok?
Batman Forever?
Right. Did Joel Schumacher, was he the architect for Hong Kong?
I mean, it feels not neon.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's not neon. But man, like, yeah, like, I mean,
it looks pretty
bright.
Colorful.
Pretty bright.
Would attract many a lizard.
Yeah. Overall, we're not. I thought it was fine. Like, I don't have high expectations. I'm not a huge, Kong or Godzilla guy. So, I wasn't putting this movie under the microscope. I thought it was fun. Rebecca Hall is very pretty. I thought Alexander Skarsgård was really good. But yeah, just give me big monster fights. I love Mechagodzilla. I love when that the Korg kid was like, "Oh, it's not Robo Godzilla, it's Mechagodzilla." It's like, it's Mechagodzilla.
You're really hitting these impressions out of the park. First Bane, now that kid. Holy smokes!
So I thought it was a big fun smash 'em up. I think, like most people, I'm like, this could have been 45 minutes of just all the fights.
I think where I messed up was I watched King of the Monsters and then went right into Godzilla at Kong.
King of the Monsters.
And it was just like, it was too much monster fight. It was like, oh, my whole Sunday was just, you would have thought that Easter was all about monsters rising from dead.
Matt, I think you're a resident kaiju guy.
Well, maybe.
Answer me a question first. Did you like Skull Island?
Yes. Yes, I did. I think Skull Island's probably the best of the bunch out of all the movies, although there are things that I like in all of them. I think Skull Island had the best human cast out of all of them, whereas I think King of the Monsters had the worst human cast out of all of them.
You can interact with Godzilla, or you can interact with King Kong. Famously, like, I mean, we know we can interact with monkeys and gorillas, like, so it's not like, oh, fuck, this thing is here, and then humans are just scattering around the ground, like, you know what I mean? Is that, does that make sense?
I have
sense
no
at
idea
all?
What you
I'm lost.
Like, oh, fuck, right. This thing is here.
He's talking to us famously. We can talk. We here in this basement famously can talk to monkeys. Like, where's he going with this?
Famously, we can talk to monkeys. And oh, fuck, this thing is here. What?
Yeah, you lost me, dog.
Monkeys and gorillas learn sign language. We are able to communicate with them. Mm-hmm. We cannot do that with Godzilla. Godzilla is just a force of nature, but there is a very human element with a giant monkey.
That's much
that
that's,
plays better against human characters with something we recognize.
What a great description. Andy, cut that last part out where Paul was making no sense.
It was gibberish. You were communicating like Godzilla on that first attempt.
Yeah. That's how Godzilla would explain this movie to us.
What was your question? Did I like Skull Island? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I like Skull Island. I like them all for various reasons, but you could definitely make the case that Skull Island is the best of the bunch. I still really like that first Godzilla. I thought it was really cool the way that they did the slow burn thing where, you know, it was kind of like Jaws. You don't really
the
see
Aaron
him.
The Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Yeah.
Johnson?
Something.
Aaron, yeah. Is that part of this?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're all connected. Like, there's
two Godzillas in the Kong movie and all this.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. So, And then King of the Monsters obviously brought it with the monster fights, although they, I think they kind of, I don't know what they were doing with the human element of that storyline, but the monster fights did not disappoint. So what I'm getting at is they all had their own strengths. I think that Kong versus Godzilla, the spectacle of it was the strong point of that movie to me. Just seeing like these two juxtaposed fighting styles going against each other and then getting kind of the payoff with the Mecha Godzilla stuff. And I thought it was interesting how you had kind of the two human storylines running parallel, that, you know, these are the Godzilla humans and these are the Kong humans. And I think they both had aspects to their stories that were interesting. I mean, the story was ridiculous. Like, this series has gotten, just like the old Toho versions, has gotten more and more absurd every movie.
Or I feel like it's gotten into Fast and Furious territory, where at some point there's just a monster attacking a city, and then at some point we're digging up a renewable energy source to power the world from Hollow Earth. It goes from stealing car radios to we're driving cars on the moon.
It's very true. That is right. The progression.
So, we have kind of a, I know that we're running late already with this episode, thanks to Ethan Van Sciver talk, but Paul, you liked the movie?
Yeah, I quite enjoyed it.
I did too. In spite of the fact that it was one of the dumbest movies I feel like I've ever seen, but I enjoyed the spectacle. I enjoyed the fights. I enjoyed, I think, the parts that you were supposed to enjoy, and a lot of really cool shots. You know what my favorite shot in the whole movie was? Where the airplane's taken off the aircraft carrier, and you see the POV, like, from you're looking right at the pilot, and you see King Kong getting smaller and smaller as the plane's, like, zipping off of the carrier. Yeah. I thought that was such a cool shot.
I think they did a lot of neat POV stuff. They did, like, Godzilla's falling POV, and you're looking at his face. Like, if he's holding a camera falling. They did a lot of weird stuff like that, but it seemed so unique that I was like, oh, well, they just don't give a fuck. Like, there's no realistic aspect that this would be happening in the movie, but like we're following, you know, this heavyweight falling to the ground.
Yeah. And Ian, you did not like it.
I did not. And like I said, maybe it's my own fault. I caution anyone from watching, you know, 6 consecutive hours of monster
sitting through. Mash 'em up. I think King of the Monsters is an exhausting movie in and of itself. I would not recommend doing a double feature with that.
Yeah.
Godzilla versus Kong. It that's a lot.
I feel like I was burned out by the time I even made it to,
like,
absolutely. I can totally, I was pretty bored with King of the Monsters the first time I saw it, generally, because you have to suffer through so much dumb human stuff. Like, what was the woman, the mom in it? Like, her
Vera Farmiga.
Her like motivations for what she was doing was like bonkers crazy.
I don't like her as an actress. Everything I've seen her in, I'm like, I don't like this character.
The only time I've ever liked her is
Are
in
you
the
unable
Departed.
To separate the actress from the art?
I can't. Because I feel like she's sort of the same bitchy person.
Her crime?
Maybe bitchiness. It's just her face. Maybe she has resting bitch face. Yeah, maybe
I
she
sentence
does.
You to me not liking your movies.
But in Bates Motel, like, I've seen a bunch of episodes and I'm like, this woman is terrible.
Why would her son want to fuck her?
I don't know. Something about Vera Farmiga, I'm not in everything I've seen her. Even in The Conjuring, I'm like, oh God, Patrick Wilson, you're so handsome and charismatic. Leave this woman. So, I feel like you can trace, Ian, like I've said to you, like I've said to this podcast, The Last Jedi broke my critical viewing of movies. I don't care after The Last Jedi. At some point, when we had an emergency podcast for The Last Jedi, like at some point I was like, man, why do I feel all of this hate for one thing? None of this matters. Like none of it matters. If I remotely enjoy something, I'm fine. I'm gonna remotely enjoy it. Like, and I don't think since then I've hated anything. Because I'm like, meh, they tried. Like, I can't think of, like, so I watched this Studio Ghibli movie called Pom Poko, which was really fucking dumb. Like, it was really stupid. Like, that's probably
I could have told
thing,
you that at Pom Poko.
That's
but...
probably the thing I hated the most since The Last Jedi. Maybe something else, but, like, I don't have, I listened to those podcasts before The Last Jedi. I've had visceral, venom-filled reactions to dumb things that I shouldn't have even given a shit about. But now I think I've been properly recalibrated where I'm like, you know what? They tried their best.
Maybe that's
it wasn't for me. They tried their best. So if you're coming here for hot takes anymore, you're not going
to
get it from
10.
Me.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, that's how I feel. Every time I watch something, I'm
five
like...
5 stars.
Yeah. That was all right. Whenever I really 100%. Like something, like Black Christmas, I'm like, I feel like I unearthed gold because I'm like, oh my God, I really did like this. This yeah. wasn't just...
Shocking that it wasn't made this century.
Yeah, this wasn't just like, that's fine. They did an adequate job.
Yeah.
Final scores for Kong vs. Godzilla.
Converse?
Kong vs. Godzilla. Godzilla vs. Kong.
I thought you said Con vs. Godzilla. And I, was like, I pictured these Converse shoes with his monkey feet splitting it open. What?
See, I would like Converse Godzilla. It'd have like a little tail on the back of it too or something.
It would
something.
Have like the spikes up the high top.
That would be awesome on the side. Really cool. 10 out of 10 for those shoe concept that
yeah,
we came up with.
10 out of 10 for Converse Godzilla.
But how about Kong vs. Godzilla or Godzilla vs. Kong? Why don't we know the name of this movie?
Because none of it matters. Because after The Last Jedi, none of it matters.
So what's your score, Paul?
10? 7. 7. I thought it was quite... I thought it was fun. It was fun.
They tried
whatever.
Their best.
Yeah. They spent a lot of money on it. And I appreciate it looked good. It looked really good.
How patronizing. Well, you sure? You're like
sports teams that underachieve. Well, they spent a lot of money on that team. Well, the Kings tried. They tried their best.
It's like you're a mother and it's like, oh honey, you spent a lot of money, I guess. It was a good job. I did not like will not watch again 4 out of 10.
That's crazy, Ian, but it's an 8. It was very good, very enjoyable, very stupid.
Yeah.
It was like the very
I'm
going to
give it the Matt 1-point swing. I'm also going to give it an 8.
Oh, nice. I convinced you with its dumbness.
Yeah, because it was. It was. It was enjoyable, and it was stupid. Just like the McSauce podcast. That's going to do it for us tonight. My name is Paul McGinty.
Ian Sharpley.
Converse Godzilla.
We'll see you next time.